Last week we talked about shop safety. Ears, eyes, nose, throat. We never quite made it to fingers. Today, let's talk about saving your fingers from really bad things happening to them. My name's Roger Kugler. This is Working at Woodworking Podcast, number 24, Shop Safety, Part 2. Okay, show of hands. How many people have injured themselves in the shop using some type of power tool or hand tool for that matter? Yep, that's what I thought. Accidents happen. Craftsmen get hurt. The idea is to reduce or eliminate the number of times you get hurt doing your craft. So, what do you think is the most dangerous tool in your workshop? Bandsaw? Table saw? Jointer? Drill press? Maybe you're still using a radial arm saw? Well, they're all dangerous, and they need to be respected. But if I had to choose one as the most dangerous, I think I would choose the jointer. That is the only machine that has a self-feeding mechanism. The way the blades turn, if your fingers get caught in that, it literally will pull your fingers into the blades, just chomping off more and more as it goes. Something will have to happen to get your hand out of that jointer. I would like to think that after I pee myself and pass out, that my hand will become dislodged from the jaws of the jointer. Hopefully, I never experience that. I think there may be more injuries caused by the table saw. Or at least that's the one that really gets its focus. And that's what we're going to talk about today. I was kind of wasting some time on YouTube watching random woodworking videos. And I came across a video by a butterfly house. My major table saw accident. Now, safety has always been one of the things high on my list. And since I teach, I have a keen interest in that, passing on good safety advice to students. So I watched her video. And she's a young lady, Minnesota teacher, and she makes stuff out in her shop. And she was using a table saw, and she just wrong appendage, wrong time, and a wrong place, and she cut it into blade, and it took virtually severed the tip of her thumb. She said there was just a piece of skin hanging onto it. The link to the video is in the show notes. And her soliloquy was not so much on how this happened or why it happened. She admitted that right out front. She was an idiot and she stuck her hand into a saw blade. But she did kind of explain why she thinks she did that. And then she goes into great detail on what happened after. And that I found very fascinating. And she has some tips that I'm going to pass on. One of the things that she found out in her ordeal was not every doctor at every emergency room is equipped to reattach your thumb. And she goes into detail, and she referred to an organization called the American Society for Surgery of the Hand. The link is in the show notes. And as woodworkers, we should spend a few minutes cruising that website. There is a Find a Hand Surgeon link on it that you can enter your zip code, and you can see the doctors in your area that are qualified to, like, you know, reattach your finger. Maybe nice to know. Hopefully you'll never have to use it. So today I want to jump into talking about accidents. So today I want to jump into talking about how accidents happen, how we can stop accidents, and what to do if an accident happens. And we'll talk about a couple other areas in the shop that safety concerns that we need to be aware of. So, how accidents happen. I think there's two things that occur. Number one, we do something stupid. Number two, we're not paying attention. So doing something stupid, we've all been there, whether you admit it or not. I like to say that there's a kind of a sixth sense that people develop around tools, machinery, and this could be a table saw, it could be an excavator, a dump truck, a gravel crusher. There's just, I think, this innate survival mechanism that's buried that if we allow that to come out and help guide us, we can avoid a lot of accidents. Some people will call this a sixth sense or saw sense or safety sense. It's that feeling in your stomach you get when you're about to do something incredibly stupid. That's something that we really need to learn to listen to. When I have a new student, you know, introduction to woodworking, one of the first things we talk about is shop safety, personal protective gear, so on and so forth. And one of the first exercises I do with new students is what I call the PIT test, the preservation instinct test. And what I do is I get a piece of wood, put it on the table, I don't use a clamp, and I get a chisel. And I demonstrate the basic uses of a chisel. And as I'm struggling a little bit with trying to hold this piece of wood insecurely on purpose, with a chisel in my right hand, I place my left hand on the end of the board in front of the chisel in which the direction that I'm trying to remove wood. So my hand, my flesh, is directly in front of the chisel. And then I look at my students, the ones that just look like they ate sour grapes or are obviously turning away in revolt, tells me that they have a strong instinct of self-preservation. And I stop. I don't actually cut myself. And I explain this principle. If you had this reaction, good. Use this. Don't try to squash this. This will keep you safe in the shop. Accidents happen. Nothing's 100%. But you are well on your way of avoiding some serious injuries, in my opinion. We really need to learn to listen to ourselves. When we just get this feeling that something doesn't feel right, stop, look around, take a deep breath, evaluate the situation. Chances are really good something's not right. And this is totally different than the old adage of, hey, watch this, hold my beer. So cultivate this. Try not to do stupid things. Number two, not paying attention. I think this is what affects older woodworkers a lot of times more than younger woodworkers. I know that this is the one that I really struggle with. Every day I'm out in the shop cutting wood. You have done this thing 100 times, 1,000 times. It's instinctual. I could do this in my sleep. Well, someday you will, and you'll end up putting your hand into the table saw blade because you were, in essence, sleeping. You were not paying attention. And this is what the lady from the butterfly house did. She admits she lost focus. She wasn't paying attention, and she put her hand into the table saw blade. There's a couple products I make that I have to have an exposed blade. There's no real way of rigging a guard, although I am rethinking that statement. And when I make the cut, I really, really concentrate on where my hands are before, during, and after. And the cutoff is the one that usually will get me. You make the cut on the table saw, the waste piece falls away, and what do? You reach for it. Don't tell me you've not done that. We have all done that. If you're a little less experienced in the workshop, you may do this with much more care than some old bearded codger who's been doing this for 50 years just kind of casually reaches in. Oh, geez, where did my fingertips go? This is what happens. So how do we stop these accidents from happening? I practice and I teach what I call the pre-planning accident prevention. This was explained to me by an owner of a limestone quarry. Yeah, I know, kind of weird going from woodworking to limestone quarries. This was years ago, years and years ago. And this gentleman was in a kayak class my wife and I were running. And in kayaking, whitewater kayaking, everything is about safety. And we really, really emphasize all the safety procedures, not letting anyone get killed or do stupid things. And anyway, after the class, he came up to me and really kind of thanked me for going in depth and so emphatically and emotionally about the safety procedures that we had learned. And he introduced himself, said that he owned a limestone quarry. Don't get that every day. And we started to talk about safety procedures and things like that. He kind of offhandedly mentioned that OSHA has their own coffee pot in the office building at the quarry because they are there so much. He said they practically live there. And he welcomes it. It's a family-owned quarry, been there for generations. A lot of the people who work there are either family members or friends of family members, and he doesn't want to see anyone get hurt. And so he really goes above and beyond trying to keep everybody safe. And he told me that the guys from OSHA had taught him that if you implement this, I guess it's an OSHA program of pre-accident prevention, you can cut down on your accidents and your downtime and so on and so forth. And so the way this works is that in the pre-planning accident prevention method, the accident happens when your flesh is placed in front of the cutting edge of the chisel. That is the accident right there. The only thing left to happen is for the blood to start flowing. If we can stop blood flowing at the moment the flesh is placed in front of the edge of the chisel, we can stop blood flowing. And hence, the pre-planning accident prevention. We want to stop the accident before the accident happens, before we place our flesh in front of a cutting edge or into a table saw. So the second way that we can help to prevent accidents from happening is to recognize when they are most likely to happen. Right after lunch. You got to lunch, might be a little heavy, and you're kind of full, you're kind of overstuffed maybe, and you start to get this crash, just, a little drowsy, not quite, sharp, and boom, hand goes into the table saw blade. Or sometimes in the later afternoon. This is the one that affects me. 4:30 or so, I still have a couple hours of work, but I'm kind of dragging here. And I just have to be very, very careful what I'm doing at that moment. And typically, I will stop and go in and get something to drink, maybe have a light snack, do some paperwork. 15 minutes, I'm kind of recovered, kind of refreshed, and I can go back out and continue working. So don't be afraid to take little breaks during this. In fact, you have those days, like a Monday when it's really Thursday, just when things are not going right. Maybe you shouldn't be standing behind a table saw. Maybe this isn't the time to joint all of those sticks over there. Maybe you should clean the shop or do some paperwork or sand. That's it. We can always sand something. So just kind of listen to your body, listen to your brain, and just exercise a lot of caution. Don't be afraid to reschedule work because you're just not quite into it. And honestly, I think the older you get, the more prevalent this becomes. So the third way you can help stop accidents from happening is to always pay attention. You can pay attention now, or you can pay money later. It's kind of up to you. And some people will kind of rally against this. Well, accidents happen. You never know when they're going to happen. That's why they're called accidents. Yes, absolutely true. But that doesn't mean that we blindly go forward like sheep, meh, into the spinning blade. Always pay attention. You can do this. And any people out there who have had any firearms training at all, there's three words that you have committed to memory. Muzzle control, muzzle control, muzzle control. It is not a suggestion. It is not a good idea to practice most of the time. No, there are no exceptions. Muzzle control, muzzle control, muzzle control, always. And if you're around a bunch of, you know, gun people, firearms enthusiasts, that's one thing that is not tolerated. Someone who does not practice that, you will be asked to leave and not come back. And I think that same, I'll call it fanaticism, can be applied to the shop. When you're around a power tool that can cause you great bodily harm and cost you a great amount of money, you practice attention, attention, attention. Don't fall into that trap of, I've done this 1,000 times, I could do this in my sleep, because there could be a time where you actually do it in your sleep, not paying attention, and cut your hand off. So just go ahead and borrow that. Muzzle control, muzzle control, muzzle control. Every time you're in the shop around spinning machinery. In addition to that, you have to know the machine that you're working with. Read the instructions. I know that's kind of, counter male. You know, ask a lady. She'll know everything about that tool. Ask a guy. Well, maybe not so much. But read the instructions. And if you're not sure about something, ask someone. Just don't go blindly charging forward, into spinning saw blades. Are you comfortable around the tool? I hope not. I'm not comfortable around any of my tools. I know exactly how that thing can reach out and bite me. I'm confident in the use of the tool, but I can't say that I'm ever comfortable, and I don't think you should be either. Your work area, dust-free, uncluttered. And the last incident that I had with a table saw, I violated this. I was making a bunch of cutoffs, and the waste was falling, to the left of the blade. And after I had gone through a stack of material, I would stack them on the left. Well, it started to get pretty crowded over there, and I really should have known better, but, I wasn't practicing really good muzzle control, and I hit one of those pieces. It fell into the spinning blade and kickback. Now, fortunately, it wasn't serious. It was a small piece, but man, that will definitely get your attention. So work in an uncluttered space. That's where those little carts, the in-feed cart and the out-feed cart, could come in very, very handy. Leave that table saw top uncluttered. Push sticks. I don't really like push sticks very much. I don't think they're very effective. No. I'm an advocate of using push sticks as opposed to your fingers. I think a hold down is much more effective. This is a block of wood that has a notch cut in it to capture the end of the wood as you're pushing it through the table saw. The nice thing about a push block or hold down is that it is controlling more of the wood. It's holding the piece down to the table saw, not letting the leading edge climb, which could catch on the revolving table saw blade and cause said kickback. Because the push stick really is only doing one thing. It's pushing forward. It's not really holding the work. It's just pushing through the blade. And to me, that's incredibly unsettling. So I like a good beefy, hold down, something that has some height to it so that your hand is not near that spinning blade. Guards. Of course you should use guards. Okay, show of hands. How many people are using your table saw guards? Yeah, that's what I thought. I know what you're saying. Well, I'm not dumb enough to stick my hand into a spinning blade. Yeah? Are you smart enough to keep your hand from being pulled into a spinning blade? When I was in high school, many moons ago, I took a tractor safety operators course. This was something brand new that had come out that anyone under the age of, I think, 18 had to have a tractor safety operating course if you were going to drive a tractor. And I signed up for the course. It was taught in the high school by the FFA teacher, and it was absolutely wonderful. One of the most impressive things I learned, he had a broomstick. It was about 2, maybe 3 feet long. And on the end of the stick, he had a piece of wire that was, again, maybe 2, 3 feet long. Part of the safety lecture was how not to lose an arm in a farming accident. This stuff happens. Any of you folks out there who grew up on a farm knows that this stuff happens. And the demonstration was that you are out picking corn. Now, this is back in the day of the single row corn pickers. And it clogs up. Of course it clogs up. They always clogged up. And instead of shutting the tractor down, shutting the machinery down, you leave everything running, get off the tractor, and go over and grab a corn stalk and start pulling. Here was his demonstration. He held on to the corn stalk, the broom handle, by the piece of wire. And there was a loop in the wire so that he had a very good grip on this. And then he held that out to a student. He said, go ahead, grab this corn stalk, the broom handle. And he says, you're trying to get this out of the corn picker, and so you're pulling on it. And the kid would start pulling on the broom handle. And literally, in the blink of an eye, he pulled that broomstick towards him, moving it about 2 feet, and with his other hand, reached up and grabbed the guy's hand, and then his other hand grabbed his arm and right up to the shoulder in the blink of an eye. I mean, I would say it was under a second. And what he was demonstrating is what happens to we humans that have a really tight grip on something, and then that something starts to pull us into danger. We have this reflex to hold on, to grip even tighter. And so as soon as that corn stalk starts to come free and get sucked into the corn picker, we instinctively grip even tighter and allow our hand and our arm to be pulled into the corn picker. Now think about this. You're pushing a piece of wood through the table saw. You're holding on to that piece of wood. Something happens. The back edge of the wood starts to ride up on the upspinning portion of the saw blade. The saw blade catches that block of wood and starts to rotate it and fire it back at us. What's our hand doing? Our hand is still holding on to the block of wood. Instinctively, we haven't let go of it. And our hand gets dragged into the spinning blade. That's the point. Sometimes we can't prevent putting our hand into a spinning table saw blade. So what I was taught in shop class by the shop teacher, and considering the shop teacher and the FFA teacher were good buddies, he taught us the practice of restraint. Now we had, I believe they were Delta table saws, cabinet saws, great big monsters, really, really nice. And they had a fence that was about an inch and a half wide by maybe 3 inches tall. And any time that we were pushing a piece of wood through and we were not using a push stick, we didn't use the hold down blocks back then, and we were not using a push stick, that we had to straddle 1 or 2 fingers over that fence so that we were really pushing the block through with our thumb and our index finger. If that block of wood started to rotate into the blade and that thing takes off, our fingers over the fence would restrain our hand from being pulled in with that block. And I've always practiced that. And it's a very reassuring feeling when you do that. If I'm running a small piece of wood through the joiner, I do the exact same thing. I get my fingers kind of wrapped over the table saw or the joiner fence, so that if something were to happen, my hand would be restrained from following the piece of wood. Whether it's a kickback, it gets sucked into the joiner knives, it gets kicked out, whatever. My hand can't go anyplace because the fingers are wrapped around the joiner. And I found that very, very comforting, very reassuring, and it increases my confidence level whenever I'm working around a piece of machinery in that method. And I think this kind of goes back to wood carvers, because in wood carving, we position our hands on the work so that by the time the chisel gets to the end of the cut, the chisels also end at the end of the mobility of our hands. I don't know if that makes any sense or not. It prevents kind of freehanding a chisel through a piece of wood, and it's going really good, really good, really good, and whoa, you slip, and now you've cut, you know, 3 inches deep into the part that you didn't want to cut. But so if you can limit your hands so that it cannot go any further than what it's supposed to, you eliminate that possibility of overcutting the carving. So what happens if a bad thing does happen? And this is what I got from the young lady in the video. Have a plan. You might even want to write this out. If I sever 2 fingers on the table saw blade, what am I going to do? And it might be worth just stopping and taking a few minutes and thinking about this. Are you going to panic, scream, go running around the shop, spewing blood all over the place, bopping yourself into the doors, falling onto the ground, writhing in pain? Or are you going to turn the table saw off, locate the severed appendages, and calmly execute your plan? I would like to think that I would do that in such a case, but I'd probably do the former. So the idea is to have some plan that if a really bad thing happens, what are you going to do? Can you call for help? Could you call for an ambulance? Can you operate your phone with bloody stumps? Sorry to be a little gross and graphic about that, but think about it. Could you actually do this? Do you have any first aid supplies in your shop? Would you know what to do with those first aid supplies if you had them in the shop? Do you have gauze and bandages and a first aid kit in the house 200 yards away up 3 flights of stairs? Or do you have it conveniently located in the shop someplace? I have left some links to some product that you might find useful in the show notes. Things like, you know, gauze and clotting bandages, a tourniquet. And another thing to consider, I'm not making this up, but a gallon of milk or even a quart of milk in your refrigerator. Why in the world am I even suggesting such a thing? Because if you think about it, the milk has been pasteurized. It is sterile. It's the only thing in your house that is probably sterile. In the incredibly unfortunate event that you were to sever a finger, you could pick it up, drop it in the gallon of milk, and get yourself and the gallon of milk to the emergency room. You could grab the severed finger and put it in a Ziploc baggie and add some ice to it. Chances are the ice is not going to be sterile because it came out of your tap. Not saying this is a 100% thing, it's just something I read on the internet, so it must be true. And it used to be, in the U.S., there were a lot of people who knew first aid. A lot of people served in the military, a lot of people were Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts, and this was something that they learned and practiced. Many people would go through a Red Cross training. 4-H'ers practiced first aid procedures. But today, I'm going to gander that there's not really that many people out there who know anything about first aid. That might also explain why so many people go to the emergency room for relatively minor injuries. So if you don't know anything about first aid, I would really encourage you to look up a first aid class. I strongly recommend an in-person class, but if you can't find one of those, take one online. The more you know, the more you know. Okay, sorry if that was a little, you know, kind of gruesome. But, you know, we've really got to take this stuff seriously. Muzzle control, muzzle control, muzzle control. Things can happen. And I don't care if you've been working wood for 50 years or for 5 years or for 5 minutes. Things can happen. And the more we know about the operation and the safety procedures for each and every tool that you use, the safer we can be in the shop and hopefully minimize and even eliminate these types of accidents. If there is a tool that you are unfamiliar with, it is your responsibility to learn how to use that tool. That might be as simple as watching someone do it and asking questions and having them guide you as you practice that, or at least YouTube. Watch somebody there and listen to the safety procedures that way. And of course, read the safety instructions that come with your power tool. Other things that can hurt us in the shop, electricity. Not only could electricity hurt us, it could, well, it could burn your shop down. So that might even be a separate episode. Some of the very basic things, if you don't know anything about electricity, don't mess with it. Call a qualified electrician. If you smell something that has that ozone, that kind of electrical smell to it, shut down the electrical panel. You should know how to turn off the electricity to your shop. It should not be behind 3 closet doors and a pile of clothes. It needs to be readily available. It would not even hurt to have a big sign on it says something like, you know, main electrical shutoff. Fire extinguishers. You should most definitely have a fire extinguisher in your shop. You just never know when something really weird's going to happen. They should be located near the entrance and exits to your shop. It doesn't do any good having a fire extinguisher in the center of the shop beside something that is burning. You want these near the exits so that if all else fails, you can get out. And if the fire extinguisher is located near the exit, you can grab it and then go ahead and use it. Don't keep that buried in the center of the shop. Flammable liquid storage. If you're using finishing product, paint thinners, mineral spirits, paints that have VOC, they technically really should be in some type of a flammable storage locker. You can buy these. They are pretty pricey. You can find them sometimes at auctions. Probably the best thing to do is to have them in some type of a metal container. Now, if you do an internet search and a search on YouTube, you can find information on how to make your own flammable chemical storage locker. And it kind of revolves around a paint that you can use that has a really, really, really high melting temperature before it catches fire itself. And you could build these out of wood and paint it with this special paint, and it looks promising. I really should, well, we could do an entire episode on that, and so I'm going to shut up by saying you should have your flammable liquids in the appropriate container. What about a sprinkler system in your shop? Talk to your insurance agent, talk to your local, you know, dealer. That might be an idea, especially if you are building a new shop. It might just be a couple $1,000s to add some basic sprinkler systems in there. I would rather have to restore tools that have been water damaged than I would ones that have gone through a fire, because that's basically a trip to the junkyard. And last, but certainly not least, general shop cleanliness. I can't overemphasize this enough. Number one, you're going to feel better working in a clean shop. Two, any customers that come in are going to see a clean shop, and that is going to increase their confidence in your abilities. Three, slip and falls in the shop are not fun. Sawdust on concrete is slippery. You take a tumble, you could most certainly get hurt. Well, this certainly has not been an exhaustive episode on everything about shop safety, but it hopefully is a good starting point for you. Hopefully I gave you a few things to think about in your shop. I've been doing this 50 years, and this watching that video from that young lady really made me kind of reconsider a couple things, and I've made a couple changes. So you're never too old to practice good shop safety. Again, there are some links in the show notes about some first aid kits and some bandages and things like that that you might find handy to have in your shop. Again, I would strongly recommend taking a first aid course. Just a basic one would be perfectly fine if you have not already had some training in that. And the video recommendation for the week, again, is the My Major Table Saw Accident by a Butterfly House YouTube video. Jobs that I have turned down this week? Well, to be really honest, I'm not doing very well on that. I've already accepted two jobs that I wasn't really planning on, but they're small, they're quick. People seem to need the help, so I'm going to go ahead and do those. But the work's out there if you're looking for the work. As always, I'd love to hear from you. You could reach out to me, contact me at www.workingatwoodworking.com. There's all my contact information and also down in the show notes. And until next week, happy woodworking.